Welcome to the SASMA podcast, your source for the latest insights in sports medicine. Designed for healthcare professionals, we cover everything from injury prevention to athlete performance and mental health, helping you stay informed and excel in your field. Let's dive in.
Hello and welcome to the next episode of the SASMA podcast. Today I host an incredible guest, Dr. Lavarsan Pillay. Dr. Pillay is a sports physician as well as a travel medicine physician. Dr. Pillay brings a wealth of experience to sport and exercise medicine. He has served as a team physician for numerous cricket and football teams, as well as the chief medical officer for various local and international events. He is deeply involved in South African drug-free sport and is pursuing his PhD in health surveillance of professional male footballers. His experience and passion for exercise and cancer specifically is a testament to the belief that exercise is medicine. Good afternoon, Lee, and thank you for giving up some time for this discussion today.
Afternoon, Kyle, and thank you for the invitation to speak on this topic.
Thank you. So, yeah, let's start by maybe just giving us some insight into your role and research into exercise and cancer.
Okay, so essentially my interest with regards to exercise and cancer patients came through about 15 to 20 years ago, where I started seeing patients of mine that were diagnosed with cancer and were just told, you just need to sit at home and not do anything, etc. That's when I started reading some of the research that was out at that particular point in time. And I started realizing there's a space and a place for exercise in this cohort of patients. And why are we telling these patients not to actually become physically active? Because it goes against the entire principles of how exercise can be used as a medicine. So I haven't specifically done any research myself, but I've read quite a bit of information on stuff over the years. Done some certifications as well about exercise in this space, and realize that we're not actually utilizing all the tools that can be available in managing the oncology patient, not only about the radiotherapy, the oncology intravenous drugs, the chemotherapeutic drugs. Exercise has a multi-therapeutic kind of benefit that it can offer these oncology patients.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point that, you know, again, it's about broadening our options in terms of treatment for these patients. I mean, where would you say we are in the field of sports medicine in terms of this specific population?
So I think the science is evolving and the workforce is evolving. It's evolving a lot in your countries, like some of your European countries, not all. Some of your American states within spaces like New Zealand and Australia and the South Americas as well. It's slowly taking on an entire new sort of force of being included as part and parcel of a norm of management of an oncology patient. And here in South Africa, we are slowly taking on those roles, having interactions with people that are decision makers in this space as well. So someone like Dr. Santi Pelusa, Dr. Tabiso Moledi, Dr. Mamasilo Lashaba, amongst others, are all involved in a national framework development as well. And trying to add my value in that input, always helpful. Trying to create a proper workforce, which is the most vital aspect of things. So making sure that we have an educated group of people that do understand how to actually risk evaluate and also prescribe exercise to this particular cohort. And then the biggest problem comes in about where do we get the finances and the abilities to do this. So it's about then interacting with all the stakeholders, which includes some of your medical aid schemes, etc., to say that this needs to be included as part and parcel of these oncology benefits, where someone can actually see a biokineticist or an exercise physiologist, etc., for exercise prescription.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good thing. One of my questions was going to be, I mean, which other health professionals should we include? So I think, as you say, I mean, the biokineticists and our multi-disciplinary approach is extremely important to incorporate within the team.
Most definitely. Sadly, in our South African setting, our exercise physiologists are not registered with the Health Professionals Council. I have no idea why that is the case here, whereas in other continents, they are actually registered as allied healthcare workers. And that's how they are able to influence the entire system, because they're quite a big cohort of colleagues. Yeah, it's probably going to take a lot more time to convince the HPCSA to register them as allied healthcare workers as well. But that's another ballgame altogether in order to create and strengthen an exercise prescribing workforce.
Yeah, most definitely. So, I mean, for up-and-coming sport and exercise medicine physicians, researchers, what effect does exercise have on cancer? And what is the current evidence that you've read in terms of exercise and cancer survival, as well as prevention?
Okay, so if you look at a lot of the data that's coming out nowadays, in fact, even if you go 15 or 20 years back, there is a plethora of information available on the benefits of exercise. So when we look at what benefits we want to get for these particular cohort of patients, some of them are physical, some of them are immunological, and some of them are preventative as well. So for instance, most of your cancer patients, because they're in a constant catabolic state, either because of the disease process, the poor nutritional intake, or because of the treatment regimes that they've been implemented, they all undergo sarcopenia. So implementing a strength-related program that's applicable to that particular individual will try and negate the effects of sarcopenia in these patients, as well as undergoing osteopenic and osteoporotic changes as well. Again, choosing the right exercise for these patients becomes an important factor. We know that with exercise, your immune system also gets affected. Initially, we have this little window period where your immune system dips slightly and increases your risk for infection. But secondary to that, you have a boost in your entire immune and anti-inflammatory response. And this not only helps to limit the spread of these cancer cells, which has been shown in several studies, but it also helps to prevent newer cells from forming, thereby actually helping in a preventative aspect when it comes to cancer as well. Commonly, a lot of the science is done in our most commonly seen cancers like breast cancers, prostate cancers, and colon cancers. But it has been shown in lots of other cancers how beneficial exercise is. When it comes to other side effects, and especially drug-related side effects of things like neuropathy, peripheral neuropathy, etc., exercise definitely has a benefit there. And then it becomes about the non-tangible benefits that can be experienced. As a cancer patient, oncology patient, after they've been diagnosed, they're always going through a whole lot of stress and anxiety, depressive phases, and changes in their lifestyle and their whole livelihoods get affected. And this brings on all these mental health issues. And that's where exercise can be beneficial as well, to help to deal with some of the anxiety issues, sleep-related disorders, depressive moods, etc. So we can see that it has a multimodal effect and something that is freely available to everyone with no need for specialized equipment. What is very important in these cohorts of patients is to risk stratify them, to see where can you push them into what kind of training phases of exercise, what do they want to achieve, because that's about the most important aspect, is to say what benefits do they want to get out of exercising as well, and then tailor making a program for each particular individual. Jannie from Klipperfierberg, that has been diagnosed with prostate cancer, may have a different approach on exercise than Katlego staying in Soweto, walks 5 kilometers every day just to a taxi rank. So these things must be taken into perspective as well, as to how to tailor make these programs, make it fit within their lifestyle, and make this become a long-term sort of life skill for them to actually learn.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some really great tips and benefits there. I mean, what would your approach be with a patient? You know, I think a typical thing would be the fatigue, the having no energy to be able to do anything. What would you try and motivate or get that patient to do in terms of exercise?
So that's the other thing as well. For those of us that do end up exercising on a regular basis, if you're a regular exerciser and you miss out on a couple of days, you feel flat, just physically, cognitively, you slow down, memory-wise, you slow down, etc. But just get into the gym for 15 or 20 minutes, do a little bit of cardio, a little bit of resistance training, and suddenly the next day you sleep better that evening and you wake up feeling a bit more energized, ready to take on the day. And I think it's only once you start getting people to start taking on these exercise routines and protocols will they start seeing the benefits. Remember, we're not trying to make these patients become high-level elite athletes. We're trying to get them into using physical activity as a non-medicinal adjunct to their oncological process of treatment. And it will help a lot when you have your oncologists coming on board, your surgeons coming on board, your radiologists, your psychologists, all the other allied healthcare workers that are involved in this multidisciplinary approach to understand the benefits of exercise. Because that's where these cohorts are going to come from. If they're not referred and if there's not enough information out there in the public, they won't end up getting access to exercise prescription during their oncological management process.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of mentioned was, you know, obviously you need to have an assessment of them to see how far you can push them. I mean, a question would be, you know, should exercise in this population be supervised?
I think initially it's always good to supervise patients, especially those that have not been exercisers. There are some people that will understand when you tell them how many sets and how many reps to do of how many kilograms, it'll make easy sense to them because they're used to doing that. But in most patients, you want to try and have a supervised, whether it be supervised as one-on-one or whether it be a group session. And slowly as they progress with the exercise, for yourself as the exercise prescriber to move out of the picture and them having this become their entire lifestyle change. And I think that would be the final goal as well, because it's not only about using exercise for your cancer patients, but also these cancer patients may have other comorbid diseases like hypertension, diabetes, hyperlipidemias. So it can be used to also adjunctly manage those other non-communicable diseases.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, again, as you say, you know, the group setting, especially in our low-resourced areas in the country, you know, the group type of classes are particularly important to try and put in for our population, which I think really can have great benefit.
Yeah, and I think it's important in a group setting. I mean, you look at nowadays, cycling events, park runs, etc., the amount of community feel that happens there, the amount of support. Someone's at a park run and someone falls, no one just runs past them. Everyone rushes to go and assist them, etc. And that makes the exercise become a little bit more attainable to someone. And it makes them feel, okay, I'm part of a process that I'm not the only one doing it. There's a whole lot of us that are doing it. And it becomes more enjoyable. And that's how you change someone's mind.
That's exactly. So, I mean, in terms of the actual prescription, I mean, obviously there's lots of evidence through different journals, the BJSM or Journal of Clinical Oncology, in terms of prescribing exercise to this population. But could you elaborate on a basis or on a framework of what this would look like?
Yeah, so it is. It can be quite a complicated process. Like I've initially said, I think step one is always to risk stratify these individuals. So getting basic strength evaluation from them, getting basic flexibility evaluation from them, and looking at the general medical status and the cardiac status as well. Not forgetting that we're making them exercise, so let's not forget to look at that musculoskeletal system. The last thing that we want to do is prescribe exercise to someone and then they get an Achilles tendon rupture or a calf strain or a hamstring strain. Then we're defeating our purpose. And I think once you've done that risk stratification, that's when you can start getting into how to prescribe exercise. But even prior to exercising and prescribing this exercise, it's about sitting down and having a one-on-one conversation with the individual. I've mentioned this earlier on, to find out from them what are their goals and values towards including exercise as part of their journey and what would they want to achieve, and giving them the pros and the cons of all these types of exercises as well. And like I said, there's no need to rush them. If it takes a couple of weeks to get them into this process, it is what it is. And you just have to be there in a very supportive manner. From an exercise perspective, we're looking at simple processes and protocols. So we're looking at proprioception, so your balance, etc. You're looking at flexibility exercises. You're looking at strength exercises, where we normally would use the overload principle of 20 to 30% more than your one rep max. And then you're looking at your cardiorespiratory fitness as well. So addressing all of these components will improve the general healthy status of an individual, and also from an exercise and cancer perspective, and from the response of chemotherapeutic agents, the fatigue perspective, and also helping them to decide on their nutritional demands during this process, which often sometimes people's appetites go down. So their dietary habits may need to change depending on the types of exercises they do. And then after that entire process is done, and they go in through those phases, whether it was pre-cancer diagnosis, during cancer diagnosis, or after cancer diagnosis. It's about getting to understand whether they did feel the benefits of this and trying to put them out there as champions of exercise in the oncology space. And in doing that, they can become these cancer navigators that we normally have to promote exercise as part and parcel of their journey. It's never a nice journey. No one wishes a journey like this upon anyone. So any kind of positive traction that you can gain from any aspect is always going to turn into something more productive and effective.
Yeah, and I think, as you said earlier, I think also using the multidisciplinary approach, you know, using our psychologists or coaches for CBT, mindfulness-based programs, all those type of other essential parts in terms of the psychological component.
Yes, and I'm quite this thing that a lot of our processes in managing our oncology patients, yes, we know it's a medical condition, but it's so almost office-based and hospital routine-based that we forget that we're dealing with people here. And we're just dealing with a disease. And we forget that we're dealing with an entire holistic person. And we need to bring that multidisciplinary mixture all together to everyone. A patient might not be able to access a biokineticist, but maybe has easier access to a physiotherapist. And that might be the person that will be ideally suited to go through an exercise program with them. They might not be mobile at all. Maybe they have transport-related issues, and there's cost factors involved in that as well. So maybe they can get personal trainers that have been moved in the direction of exercise in oncology patients and get them to do basic, simple home programs for them as well. So there's lots of different ways to attack the workforce when it comes to exercise in oncology. We just have to be a little bit more wise and clever about it, and we have to be a bit, we have to still keep to the basis of scientific evidence-based information and programs, but we must understand the settings that we have here in South Africa, is that what works in America may not work in South Africa. It may work in Johannesburg Central, but it may not work in the Eastern Cape. So we have to become very logical about trying to develop these workforces and these programs as well.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Now, I mean, I would like to touch on obviously just some out-of-country experience. I mean, I know you recently went to the conference in America on clinical oncology. I mean, were there new developments or any take-home messages that we can provide our listeners in dealing with the special population?
Yeah, so that was quite an interesting conference. It was I was invited at a pre-conference to give a talk at the first inaugural International Society of Exercise Oncology. And part of my role there was giving a perspective on exercise oncology in Africa. And you know what was surprising for me is that even though people understood, yes, we have our challenges in Africa, etc., from access to healthcare, from basic healthcare, and we have to worry more about things like malaria, etc. Everyone in their own countries, even your well-established first world countries, all had the same experiences of trying to actually get these programs into policy. And that's where the biggest problem comes in. It's trying to get this into policy and make it become part and parcel. Because the problem comes in is that because exercise sounds too simple, everyone says, well, it can't be that effective. Whereas sometimes the simplest solution are often the most effective solutions, you know, and that's some of the experience I got out of speaking with people from different countries. Luckily enough for me, I'm on those kind of group chats now nowadays, where you start understanding that your challenges that you face in Africa is actually just a different color compared to the challenges faced in Europe or in the Americas. So there's a long way for everyone to go, but we are we're quite far behind on it. And I think the impetus over the last year and a half has slowly started showing an interest in this year. Hopefully with the SESMA conference, we will be having a workshop. We've given quite a few talks last year online. I've spoken to some other interest groups as well about exercise and oncology and opportunities. When I get to speak at conferences, I just try and throw in a little bit in the side about exercise oncology with general practitioners, etc. I think as this interest gets stimulated more and more, we'll find that this is an interesting and an effective field to actually start getting involved in.
Yeah, I mean, and while you touched on the SESMA conference, I think obviously now in October coming up, we host our 20th SASMA conference in Stellenbosch, which is obviously very exciting. But as you said, one of the pre-conference workshops is dedicated to this topic. Could you provide us with some information into what to expect of this workshop?
Yeah, so we've invited Professor Karen Wander. She's from the Mapletree Cancer Alliance Group, and they formed a program, and that program and that certification, that's one of the certifications that I managed to get our HPCSA to actually accredit for CPD points here, where our local guys can do it online at a minimal cost compared to what they charge in America. Part of the parcel of that process is, firstly, just the basics of understanding the benefits of exercise, how to go about evaluating these patients, how to go about with basic prescriptions, and how to also use this exercise and oncology aspect from as a business model perspective. So people can understand that, you know, it's about patient care, but you can use this business model as well. Not only that, the next day, Karen Wander will also be giving us a nice long talk in one of her other symposiums about exercise oncology. And there she will probably touch on some aspects of international experiences, etc., with people like Rob Newton from Eden Cowan University. So there's going to be a lot of information given out to people, and hopefully that stimulates interest in this field of exercise medicine.
Yeah, I hope so too. And Lee, thank you for your time and a little bit of an insight into exercise as well as exercise in our cancer populations. And we look forward to being part of the workshop at SASMA conference, listening to those talks, and obviously seeing all the new developments in the field.
Yeah, exciting times. And thank you for the invitation. I mean, even at that workshop, we're going to have some of our medical doctors presenting some case studies of theirs about exercise cancers as well. You know, so it'll make for an interesting watch, read, and learn kind of scenario. And I hope that this opportunity for people to get interested in this field actually grows exponentially, because I think there's a really big market for it. There's a real need for it amongst patients. And I think there's a big need for education amongst our specialists, like our oncologists, our surgeons, etc., psychologists as well. And I think the more we focus on this, the better it will sort of develop into something a bit stronger.
Most definitely. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you. Bye-bye.